This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. It's Monday, April 24th. We are wrapping up spring football for Notre Dame, the Blue Gold game on Saturday. One of 15 practices of the spring. I throw that out as a reminder that we will talk in terms of what we saw on Saturday, certainly, but put in the context of the entire spring. And there was, with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson here, there was a lot to like, certainly individually. I think probably starting with, you know, the quarterbacks and the wide receivers.
Yeah, that was actually the good news for me is I was going to start with some of the guys on defense. But if you're looking at for the whole spring, and certainly on Saturday, they have a backup quarterback now. He's proven what Brian Kelly thought about him, at least in our looks. He's an accurate guy. I like that he can make plays outside the pocket. I think the drawback is if he had to play all year, he would have to make plays outside the pocket. I'm talking about Ian Book. I don't think it would... You can probably game plan for him over the long haul, but as we kind of assumed going in the spring, we felt they could win a game with Ian Book. They could probably win more than one with Ian Book, pending the opponent. And it's all about Brandon Wimbush, however.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the first practice when I watched Ian Book, I couldn't tell the difference between him and Montgomery Van Gorder.
I agree with
that. Now you definitely can. So, you know, that box was checked. With Wimbush, I think he's been pretty good from start to finish. When he's running, I think he's very good. When he's throwing, he's just okay to kind of good. He's got a lot of ability. I mean, talking to people around the program on Sunday, they said, look, the way this game was set up was that we wanted to put Wimbush out there so he could succeed, fail, whatever, just throw it a lot. And if you look at the sort of play selection in the first half when Wimbush was in the game, and you count sacks as passes, basically it was 3-1 pass to run. That's not going to be the offense in the fall. So keep that in mind. But Saturday was basically a vehicle for Brandon Wimbush to make mistakes that he can then learn from over the course of the summer. He has some tape to look at, and Kelly and Long and Reese can say, like, okay, what did you see here? What were you thinking there? And Wimbush can be like, well, I was thinking that, so I did this. And then he can correct that and move forward. So, Saturday was, look, it was all just a vehicle for Brandon Wimbush to get a little bit better.
And I think the difficult thing to assess is, you know, he knows he's not going to get hit, so he can stand in there and make the throws that he did. In a game situation, is he going to stand in there and make that throw, or is he going to, you know, pull out of there and burst upfield, which he's very capable of doing? There was one run, and, you know, the yardage of any of the quarterback runs was distorted because they were blowing the whistle. But he had one run out where he was credited with 6 yards, and he got out in the open field, and he looked like, to me, not like a running back in the open field because it was kind of long, exaggerated cuts and moves, but like a wideout in the open field darting through the secondary. So he was impressive. I would say he's more, I don't know exactly what you said, Pete, pretty good to very good as a passer. I think he's more than that. I think long-term, certainly he's more than that. I thought throughout the entire spring, his accuracy was very, very good. I asked him the other day about, you know, with the big receivers, and he says, yeah, you want to miss high. You know, when you do miss, and I think we saw that throughout the spring.
Which is unfortunate, though, if it's over the middle. But it got him picked off on a...
Well, not necessarily high over the middle, but high when it's a one-on-one where the receiver's breaking it out toward the sideline is what I have in mind, or the picture I have in my mind. But, you know, the receivers, Boykin, certainly continued what we saw throughout the spring. I think that's real encouraging. Claypool came on as the scrimmage went on. Elzay Mack, you know, he's a wideout tight end, so it gives you that combination and makes for tough matchups. It was a good day for the skill position people. Josh Adams, great jump cut, and then powered through some tackles on that 25-yard touchdown run.
Here's what I would say about Wimbush before we move on to the rest of the team. When it comes to his accuracy, I would no longer describe short passes as an extension of the running game, because I don't think he's accurate enough to make them an extension of the running game. He is going to have, I think, a very productive year throwing the ball 20 yards and beyond, because I think that's the way the offense is going to set up. But I don't think he's a quarterback who can win you a game based purely on accuracy and dinking and dunking his way up and down the field. he could still be very, very good this year, and I think that he will. But I think it's just it's a different kind of quarterback than what they've had in the past.
Well, that's a good point, though, because it's dinking and dunking and throwing to running backs is a different throw with a different arm slot, and it's different. And we saw that one occasion where somebody got in his passing lane. It was a real ugly sidearm throw that he threw into the ground, and that probably speaks to what you're saying, Pete, because that is a different throw, and it's not the same as, stretching his arm out and throwing a bullet 25 yards downfield, which we know he can do that.
As long as they do what we believe they'll do, what Chip Long said he's going to do, establish a running game, run the ball more than pass it, it's okay to not have an extension of the running game. I can't stand that anyway.
I'm happy to see that go.
I would prefer you run and throw the ball down the field.
Yeah. I do love what they're doing with the tight ends. You have that move tight end, and you have so many options off that. He can be a lead blocker. You can throw it to him. He can lead the way for the running back coming out of the backfield and throwing him the football.
I felt like Wimbush, early on at least, struggled to just release it to that open tight end to start in those plays. Like, he keeps looking... first.
Well, that's first read, and then that second read, there was the one instance where I think Doug Flutie pointed out, it was pretty obvious. He looked right, he read it, it wasn't there, he turned to his left, he knew where Wisher was, he knew Wisher was going to be there, and that's going to be a nice safety valve, including Elze Mack. 10 of the catches were by tight ends, 25 were by wideouts, and 6 were by running backs, and I don't think Josh Adams had one of the catches, and he had 21 catches last season. So you have a trio of running backs there that are very capable pass receivers.
Dexter Williams looked good. I'm going to go ahead and keep saying it from now on. He looked good enough for me to bring his name back.
The one-year moratorium is over.
It's over. It only lasted 6 months.
Yeah. they've got, I think Dexter Williams used the term three-headed monster, and I would not go that far considering Tony Jones has never played in a game and Dexter Williams' career is based on the Syracuse game. But they've got a lot of ability in those three guys, and especially if you're going to do, there were some sets where it's two tight ends under center. There were some sets where there were two running backs out there at once, Josh Adams and Tony Jones. There's a lot of good things you could do there, and they barely showed any of it. Including the fullback / tight end, Alize Jones, Brock Wright stuff, which is, I don't know what you're supposed to do with that in terms of defensively. I just look at this offense and I think if I was a linebacker or a safety, I would hate playing against it. So, full credit to you, Chip Long.
If you're a corner and you have that, that run pass option where you fake the read and Wimbush sprints out, and now you have to make a decision whether you stay with a receiver or you break to make a tackle, that's impossible. Yeah. I want to correct a mistake that I made in the instant analysis after the game. And I still do, however, think that the offensive line shouldn't have been getting beat as often as they did. But it wasn't. It wasn't a vanilla defensive front. Mike Elko, over the course of four quarters, threw a lot at that offensive line. We saw a middle blitz from Martini, which he timed well and found the perfect gap. We know what Tranquil can do off the edge. Dalen Hayes is legit. That's a big-time player there that you're going to count on a lot. And I thought Jay Hayes played well up front also.
And I think that makes Brian Kelly's comment that we will handle that in a game with game planning, preparation, and changing protections less crazy. It sounded like he was making a total excuse for every sack that was happening, but that's totally right. Brandon Wimbush was not checking to different protections when I think they just want to see how you handle it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that goes back to what Pete said originally.
Yeah, it was the third play of the game where I think he runs like sort of a read option handoff to Josh Adams and they just leave Dalen Hayes alone. Yeah. And Dalen Hayes is like, okay.
Yeah.
Tommy Kramer's doubling on somebody with Alex Bars for no reason. That's something where I think in the future, hopefully, Brandon Roche should be like, hey, let's slide the protection.
You
to
sure
the right.
That wasn't Smythe with Kramer double teaming? Maybe we're talking about.
We could be talking about different plays. There are a few where Dalen Hayes is a pretty explosive athlete who was made to look superhuman by the offensive line not blocking him on some.
And there points. Were, in the tail of the tape today, I tried to go through each of the sacks and why they happened. Yeah. Some were just well timed blitzes and executed well. One time, Book stepped up into the pocket and boom, a defender was right on him. Mike McGlinchey has to be better and more consistent. I know it's just a blue goal game, but Jay Hayes had had his way with him a few times, and I just don't think that...
Especially on the sack.
Yeah, I mean...
That was a nice move.
Yeah, did he get that... Was he late on the snap? Oh, he was definitely late off the snap eventually, but I wonder if he didn't have the snap.
But,
he
lost. I mean, Jay Hayes feels like he's a better pass rusher. He's using his hands better, so that's a good sign. But I just didn't think he had a real consistent game. I don't want to jump into every topic that's asked in our questions, and so I'm going to avoid what I was going to say here now and address it later. But, you know, I don't think the offensive line deserved maybe as much criticism as I offered right after the game when you sit down. And that's the problem with what we have to do after a game. We have to evaluate it from the naked eye, and we don't have the, you know, it's a better view many times sitting in front of your television, and you need to see it again to fully comprehend it all.
I think for the purpose of, since so many fans, this is their first look at the team, if you just look at the blue goal game, I thought Drew Tranquil looked great. Niles Morgan looked remarkably physical. Nick Watkins did a nice job covering. I mean, he likes himself some Nick Watkins, too, out there. Nick Watkins did a good job, though, in one-on-one. Dalen Hayes, as you said, looks superhuman.
Yeah.
And an extension of what we saw previously. Boykin is going to be productive. Mack is a tough cover. And I like the running backs in the game.
I like Isaiah Robertson at safety. He may not know what he's doing. That's why he's not further in the mix. But he's active. He's aggressive. He's not hesitant. He's physical. I think there's a good football player there. He just needs to get a little experience.
Yeah, Drew Tranquil was, I thought, the best player. Just the best player out there. I mean, the amount of production they're going to get out of him this season is... Like, a coach told me a week and a half ago that he was going to be All-American good. And I was like, okay, all right, yeah, sure. I know we all like him. He's a great guy and everything. But then watching the practice on Wednesday and seeing the game on Saturday, you're like, okay, I might buy that.
One time they lined him up in Will, and Will linebacker and Martini was off the edge. And that was the play where Tranquil darted through and dumped Tony Jones for a six-yard loss. So you have... So there's real versatility there, and I think he does a great job of disguising what he's going to do until the ball is snapped.
You know what I like most about Tranquil is if you just would have read Irish Illustrated in 2014, you'd have moved him where we had him at linebacker back then.
That's why we like him so much. Let's wrap up segment one. The kicker, as Tim asked after the game, I think correctly, Sam Kohler looks like a competent kicker, which may be significant in the fall.
He does, and he looked competent all spring, or at least the opportunities that we saw him. He's calm, he's relaxed, but yet he gets a good break on the ball. He anticipates the snap. It's not a real complicated kick. He gets good trajectory. He kicked the line drive through the uprights from 46 yards, but at least it was true and it was online. The 42-yarder was perfect. He's a solid kicker, and again, we should have asked about Brian Kelly about Justin Yoon before we walked out of there on Saturday, but we have no idea. I mean, he didn't practice all spring. What exactly is the extent of his injury that he wouldn't practice all spring? And you don't know what Jonathan Doerr can do. So, Sam Kohler, this is what I'm impressed with. Walks into Notre Dame Stadium. I know it's just a blue gold game, but walks into Notre Dame Stadium. Kicks five extra points and hits a 42 and 46-yard field goal. Meanwhile, Tyler Newsome is tiptoeing around like he's catching snaps on a sheet of ice, and he has 109 career punts. I mean,
your reigning blue goal game MVP, too.
It's hard to follow up as MVP.
Very few players repeat.
I'm sorry for turning that into a criticism of Newsome, but Kohler went in there to Notre Dame Stadium in front of 20,000 people and performed really well.
Yeah, we say it's just the blue goal game. It's just the blue goal game to us and to Niles Morgan and to Josh Adams, but it certainly wasn't to Sam Kohler. I mean, that was easily the most crunch time he had to be involved. Yeah, he had to be involved.
He did a great job.
Yeah, no question. All right, segment two, Burning Up the Boards, questions from our readers. Next, Irish Illustrated Insider.
Back to segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Madcap Lep. Pretty blunt. Is this team good enough to win 9 games this year?
Yes. Did you want more? Yeah, I mean, they're good enough. I think that they can score. They can win 9 games on offense and the defense just being okay. You know, to go beyond that, I think you can sort of like muddle your way around to 9 wins. Be 10 wins or more, you actually have to be legitimately good in all phases. I don't think they're going to be good enough in all phases.
You mean regular season. We should go by regular season,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not talking.
It's no fun to beat Rutgers in the Pennsylvania.
Yeah, 10's a big number with Georgia and, you know, the 5 road games where Notre Dame has struggled and, you know, Miami being one of those and USC at home and Stanford. That's a big number. Is 9 possible? Certainly. But I think it comes back to what we've said 20 times this spring and D-line and safety. If D-line and safety can get straightened out, absolutely, this can. Then you can think about pushing for a tenth win. But you know, I think maybe we are a little jumping the gun a little bit as far as the offense and just assuming that they're going to, you know, push 40 points per game.
You guys said that on the last podcast. They were going to break the all-time record.
He said that.
I said that. He said they're going to score more points.
Right. O'Malley's owning that.
More points per game than any team.
Yeah. I said in my
history of the world now did more than
Thursday. In Thursday thoughts, I said that they could move past Kelly's high for a year, which is 34.
Do you guys think that the Vegas win total for Notre Dame will be 8.5 or 7.5 coin of the year? And it is regular season. I believe it is regular season only.
I would put it at 8 if I was them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you could do it that way. I think it'll be 8-2, and I think they could win 9. The key for me is, and I hate to go macro on people because everybody wants drill down. You know, we're analysts. They have 5 true road games. So how many true road games will they win next year? Right? 5 true road games. So that's the key. You have to be able to win 3 true road games.
You kind of look at their road schedule and think 3-2.
That's the goal.
Home schedule...
6-1.
BC and North Carolina.
I'm saying
you should win those 2 road games. North Carolina lost a ton. They lost their entire offense. You should go in there and win. You know, again, we don't know injury situation,
right.
And you don't know,
I know what you're saying,
any of that stuff. But just looking at it now, I'd say BC and North Carolina are the 2 road games. If they go 2-3, right? If they go 2-3 in those games,
they're not winning 9.
2-3, you're not winning 9 because you're not going to be going because you're not at home. You've done it twice in 7 years, so you can't say you.
Okay,
think
you have to win at least 2 of those.
Yeah, okay,
those are 2 road games that you absolutely have to win, and then the others are what, Stanford, Miami, and
Michigan State,
and Michigan State, which you don't know.
Toss up.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Don't know where Michigan State. Well, it's a 3-9 versus 4-8. It's
we
a
know
good,
where Michigan State is right now.
Yeah,
they are a mess.
No, I'm saying
yeah,
we don't know where they're headed from here because Mark D'Antonio is a very, very good coach.
Right.
He's not going to sit there at 3-9.
In June, that line will be a toss-up line, Michigan State and Notre Dame, before we know anything else. Like, when Las Vegas throws these things out there, Stanford will be favored over Notre Dame on the road. Miami will be favored. Notre Dame will be favored over BC, and I assume they will be a little bit favored over. But it's not going to be crazy. It'll be like, you can't go crazy on road lines like that. You're always close in these
USC
games.
Lost a ton also at home. I mean, that's a game at home.
Yeah.
But now, USC will be favored.
Of course they will. And Notre Dame has...
No, it can't be at home.
In the last couple of years, beaten them, or last opportunities, beaten them at home.
Last year, for the sake of reference, Notre Dame's over-under was 9 going into the year when they did it in June. Just looked it up. So I bet, Pete, you're right, that 8 coming off a 4 win.
8's a good number because I think 7.5, 8.5, I think 8's a better number for Vegas to post.
8.5. Yeah. Yes,
they need to make money on
right.
it. I don't think they would make money at the halves.
Right.
8.5 or 7.5.
So they are good enough to win 9 games. We got it.
Yeah. Right. No problem, Madcap Lep.
B1, G-Bob, how do you think Jonathan Bonner and Jay Hayes performed in the game? You think they either can pack on more weight with a new strength and conditioning program? Bonner, in particular, playing inside. He's almost 6'4", and looks to have the frame to carry another 5 to 10 pounds of muscle.
I thought Jay Hayes looked very good, and I think that that's his job now. I don't see how that could be a rotation at all, and it's not even a matchup. Oh, we need to get a little bit quicker. Like, Jay Hayes is a powerful,
strong dude. He needs to be on the field. There's
no
question.
Pass rush ability all of a sudden. Like, Mike McGlinchey wasn't great, but it's still Mike McGlinchey, and he just beat him straight with a pass rush move in the first series of the game. Like, that's not something I thought Jay Hayes could do. So, I mean, that's not something we saw from Isaac Rochelle. So, you know, full credit to Jay Hayes for really getting
his stuff
together.
When we talked to him a couple weeks ago, he was insistent that he was a better pass rusher because of the way he was using his hands now, and he was more explosive, and I think we saw that. Now, Jonathan Bonner, I just don't see him showing up around the ball. I think he had one tackle, credited with one tackle, and not everything can be, you know, tackle totals can be deceiving. We all know that, but I don't see him making. I didn't see him make an impact on Saturday, and I didn't see him make an impact during the spring.
I still think it would be great if Daniel Cage is good enough to start a nose tackle, and Jerry Tillery can go back to the three technique, and Bonner can be a backup to Tillery.
Yes, and I thought Cage.
I don't know if he's a backup for Cage, but
Cage looked okay.
Yeah,
You know, lighter on his feet than maybe in March. So that's that's a positive development. And but I think you still look at
bottom line, he's got as much playing experience up front as anybody on the team. He needs to get in great shape. They need to have him on the field.
He survived spring ball, so now he's got no restrictions to train really hard this summer. You're not taking any contact. There's no risk of a concussion. And then you plug Elijah Taylor at some point back in there. I do think Darnell Yuel is... I look at it as like, okay, Cage, Tillery, Bonner are your top three, but then your fourth and fifth need to be Taylor and Yuel.
And Yuel has a better road to that because Taylor... I know that all these injuries are the same, but it's going to be tough for Elijah Taylor to be a game-ready, Georgia-ready football player after this injury.
All right, and then you got Dude Treadway, who I didn't really see do anything on Saturday. Tiasem, who was matched up with Jimmy Byrne. I mean, that's not a real... It's not a realistic matchup that you think, okay, well, because that happened, he can be a productive player in the fall. That just, it doesn't work that way.
I agree with that, but looking at his get-off, his use of his hands, and his ability to actually penetrate, it wasn't always Jimmy Byrne that he was going against or having effectiveness. Mm-hmm. I agree with everything that you're saying, but you look for the components that may lead you to believe, okay, can he build upon this? And I thought he did enough on Saturday to say you could build upon that.
And looking ahead, we have 47 questions about the defensive linemen that don't start, so we can address all those guys.
Yes, starting with Irish Instinct. Were the two pass rushes by Ade Ogundeje a fluke, or is he that good?
Neither. He looks like a guy who's did a nice job in the weight room over the last year. And I think he's probably still a year away from giving you anything on a Saturday.
We had a look at a practice that we only saw 30 minutes. We were up top, so the defensive linemen were right below me. One of the first notes I made in mid-March was, this guy looks like he should be able to become a player, the way he moves and the way he's built. And I did specifically say in 2018, and I don't change that. It would be awesome if it is instead in late October 2017.
But it's probably more 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
He has 4 years of eligibility.
He would really have to make great strides because I'm sure he was... You know what Brian Kelly says, and I think it's underrated in football, he's really good at 11-on-11 when he was talking about people. I bet that's a tough thing for guys like Ogundeji right now to when you're in a game atmosphere... play football and remember your responsibility and do all those things and be mature. And I watched him in a drill where he is just going to do the drill and he looked great. But that's nothing to
do. He has a good frame. He has good length. He has some athleticism. You see some quickness. All things that you can build upon.
His two sacks were not like Johnny Williams' two sacks on Montgomery Van Gorder at the end of the spring game 2 years ago. They were better than that, but they're not. Yeah, it's not Justin Tuck right now.
Golden by name, red zone offense. With inexperience at quarterback, are we going to see red zone inefficiencies, or do you think the change in offensive structure, along with Wimbush's athleticism, can help hide these issues?
There was a red zone inefficiency in the first half where he eventually was picked off by Watkins. They got down to the 11, first down at the 11. Tranquil got through, made that nice play. So down back at the 16. Then there's a sack, and it was back to the 26, and it was a sack because... it was actually good pass protection. Wimbush held on the ball too long, and then the next pass is an interception. And that is the learning curve of Brandon Wimbush.
That epitomized 2016.
Exactly
right there.
I felt like I was in a time capsule, but that is the learning curve for him, so I bet there could be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern. You're thinking that Chip Long's going to run the football a little bit more. The other thing, I don't know that anybody mentioned this, there's a lot of... the running game is more quick hitting as opposed to drawn out, and you know you allow the offensive line to do what it does. Well, it also allows the defensive line to do what it does. I thought it was a lot more quick hitting. That would help in the red zone. I think there's more variety to what we're seeing from Chip Long, so that you know that hopefully helps you in the red zone. Plus, you got five guys over 6'4.5", so.
Great theory moment.
It's very difficult to predict how it's going to turn out in the red zone coming the next season, but there's There's potential there.
One more time capsule moment. Those five guys over 6'4 and a half. Did you see the back shoulder fade to Fink? Shortest guy in the stadium. They threw it.
Boykin had a back shoulder,
he did,
too.
Yes.
Everyone starts a 5'10 corner somewhere. Someone is going to be covered by a 5'10 corner. Or you could just put the fullback tight end option in there, which I freaking love. And it's going to evolve my favorite player.
And Elizay Jones should be a weapon for you in the red zone as well. They've got weapons down there. They need a variety, a mix that makes it less predictable than it had been.
And one reminder for us and fans, I don't think Notre Dame showed their 10 best goal line and red zone plays yesterday to the world.
No.
They were practicing so on TV.
Yeah.
I think it'll look better.
Right.
Irish fan 425. I was at the game and I was thoroughly impressed at the entire defensive line. Even more surprised at the aptitude, of the backups. I thought Tiasa Makwa, Ogundeji Okwara played well. What say you regarding defensive line depth?
I think Tim's point about Tiasa was well taken, that I've got to go back to the Bob Diaco thing when he spoke of Ayala Hardy. He said he was so low, such a low-rated player, that now that he's competent, we can start making him into something. Tiasa finally looked competent when he would push Jimmy Byrne, who has never played a game or down, into the backfield.
Yeah.
Tiasa never once at any point in my life ever flashed until the blue goal game.
Right. I think that's a good way to look at it. Because, like, let's say if a player was rated a 1 out of 10 and now he's a 4 out of 10, you could look at that as he's a 4 out of a 10. Or you could look at it as he improved 300%. And, you know, maybe both those things are true with some of these backup defensive linemen.
Yeah, you know, Julian Okwara, again, a good athlete, a lot to work with there, but he's physically, strength-wise, he still has a long way to go. Ogundeji, I don't think you see him until, I mean, really, not in 2017, maybe 2018, probably 2019.
I think if he's going to be more than decent, you would see him in 2018 because it would be year three.
Right,
but
right,
if he's
right.
only going to end
right.
up decent, then you're right. right. Because all these guys are young. They're all young with him.
Yeah, I mean, Elijah Taylor's hurt. We don't, you know.
That injury's going to end up hurting.
When Tiasem flashes once, you don't conclude, there's a player.
No, but it's nice that he flashed.
But exactly. But you concluded, there's something to work with. So I'm not going to watch Brandon Tiasem from Saturday and say, now they have a player. That's just not the way it works. It's not.
I think they have an option, right?
It gives them something to work with. It also lends a little bit of credence. We joked about Brian Kelly would always mention Brandon Tiasem in a post-game practice. At least it gives credence to that because we had not seen that. I'm not saying he's not telling the truth. I'm just saying I didn't see it. Saturday we saw some.
I used to stop taking notes when he would say that in those press conferences. I realized that there was nothing we could use.
Yeah, something good happened with Brandon Tiasem on Saturday. That's good. It's a good starting point. He's definitely a huge dude, and they don't have a ton of those on the defensive line. So that's a pretty big positive.
He sacked Wimbush with one finger. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
And the red jersey.
Let's just say, worst case scenario, the upside of Brandon Tiasem, he has improved so much that they're able to redshirt Darnell Yule. Great. Okay. I mean, that would be fine.
Get another name.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not that one, because that name's got
to be. Five snaps or something. Right. You know, just you have somebody you can put in there. I'm trying to think of a good comparison over the years. Nobody is coming.
They don't do it. That's why we always say there's always a guy, and that would be great. Maybe Elko.
Maybe
Elko.
I mean,
does
by
one.
The end of
Utupo's early
Konar
Schwenke, maybe.
Yeah.
You've had conversations with coaches where it's just they kind of admit after the fact it's strange that guy didn't get to play until this point. I think it's hard if the coordinator doesn't want to put them in. Mm-hmm. They don't get in the rotation. Like Elijah Taylor took to the Syracuse game where everybody played, and then he didn't play again. After making plays in the Syracuse game, and then he made plays at USC. It was a weird usage situation, so maybe Elko is the guy that can find five snaps from a couple guys, and all of a sudden that helps your backups.
But to summarize the question, no, we are not nearly as high on the defensive line as you were from Saturday. Any Davis, too, do you think we are setting expectations too high for Wimbush? The talent is undeniable, but he is a first-year starter in a new offense.
What are the expectations?
Well, I think we keep that first. I mean, I think we keep talking about how good Brandon Wimbush is going to be. We
temper it though by saying we don't know.
He's going to be a lot better in 18 and 19 than he will be in 17. He'll probably throw double digit interceptions. This is what young quarterbacks do. But you know, when we see him in practice and he's an amazing physical athlete, running strength. I mean, that's who he is. We don't know how many mistakes he's going to make in game situations, but he's going to make a lot more in 2017 than he will in 18 and 19.
Pete had a good point during the game. We have to do a fair amount of over-unders here, whether they're published or not, on player stats. Wimbush, when he broke free and they called it a fake sack, over-under 3.5 for touchdown runs for Wimbush, and then Pete added in excess of 30 yards next year, because that is a guy that when he breaks that first level, he's not getting 8 yards. It's a lot more.
Yeah,
and he can make guys miss downfield too and outrun them.
Twitter seemed to indicate that it was over by far.
Well, I mean, it's not a lot of quarterbacks get a lot of 30-yard touchdown runs either, but it's a good call.
It's not Irish Illustrated that is overplaying Brandon Wimbush. The expectation on the outside will be for him to be a finished product this fall, and I don't think he's going to be a finished product this fall. But you're excited about what the future holds.
My expectations are Brandon Wimbush is going to be so good that Notre Dame's going to have a run-first offense, and that's going to be great.
I think he'll be a huge playmaker this fall that makes plenty of mistakes, and not only picks and stay in the pocket too long when he's trying to look downfield, and as you said, some inefficiencies when you are, like this, I used inefficiencies, but in the short passing game where it's not, he'll be so much better next year when he's checking down to the third guy than he was this year, so those are the things, but he'll also be on every single game's highlight reel. Right? I mean, he'll just make plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think he's in for a good year, but I think because he's new, that gets enhanced a little bit. I think there's a novelty factor with him that makes people maybe more interested in him than they would be if it was.
But we're not saying he's going to be an All-American in 2017.
No.
By any stretch.
I think he'll be one of Notre Dame's most important playmakers, and he'll make mistakes.
Yeah, well, I mean, how Chip Long on Friday of last week was talking about how he doesn't really need to be a leader necessarily. He just needs to, like, be part of the offense. That's not something you hear from Brian Kelly about his quarterbacks most years. It's the quarterback has to do everything. I think his offense is going to be suited for Brandon Wimbush to not have to do everything.
I think his demeanor will provide the leadership that he needs to provide.
Yeah, they already have 24 captains, so you don't need another one. Irish Grizz, 53. Walk-ons they're everywhere. I mean, how many linemen are captains? How would you rank Kramer? How would you say Kramer looked in the blue goal game to how he's looked in April practices you're able to observe?
I thought to the naked eye that he didn't play real well. A couple plays, you know, pass rushes stood out. When I went back and watched the game, I thought he played much better than I gave him credit for. I mean, when he got guys lined up and took them one-on-one, that's a big dude to get around. Run blocking, that's a big dude to get around. My concern with him, though, is the mobility factor and the ability to slide against a speed rusher. A lot better speed rushers than what he saw on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you guys saw way more of him in practice than I did, but just watching the game, I thought he was... I mean, he's clearly the fifth of the five offensive linemen.
Yes.
Probably by a wide margin. So that's a position that needs to be better.
And you're to clarify, you mean wide margin from number four, not from...
Yes, not from number
six. Not from Eichenberg, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... That again, like Brandon Wimbush, he has not started a game. And he's going to be better in the 3 years that follow this one than he is right now.
And do you think, is there any chance that based upon what they saw this spring, they bump Bars back out to tackle and move Kramer inside?
I don't know if I said this to you guys, but if I had predictions for the summer, I would say that they would start more than one right tackle this year.
That's a great, like, I totally agree with that, but that's...
I don't know who the other one will be.
You just don't want it to be at the expense of a loss.
Yeah, because, I mean, Eichenberg didn't jump out at you either. He got beat on the edge. And you know, that's what, I mean, you can have 80 snaps, but we remember one or two because they were bad ones and they stood out. And that's often unfair, especially in our analysis right after the game. And even in our analysis of film, it isn't going to be anywhere near, you know, what Notre Dame goes through. So
just wait till next August when we can tell you how improved the offensive line is, and they'll be the worst offensive line.
I'm sure we'll temper that this year.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know, it's I do think that I referenced this earlier, Brian Kelly, when he said those wouldn't be game situations. I thought he was using an excuse, but it is a reason. It's a reason that Tommy Kramer wasn't moved into right position by Brandon Wimbusher by the sidelines. And the sidelines, I know we don't want to see it, but every once in a while the sidelines going to stop the play and make them check, and they're not going to be going fast. But as Pete said, they were going fast early. Maybe that was what just wanted to focus on that early. If they could keep that going, he doesn't have to be fantastic.
Like if they're moving the chains and they're producing in the red zone, I don't care how many times they look to the sideline. Not Jay Tafel. Question for Pete. Bigger man crush, Bo Scarborough or Chase Claypool?
Bo Scarborough. I mean, Chase Claypool has a long way to go to catch Bo Scarborough. And I like Chase Claypool a lot, as you all know.
Sounds good. That's
seems fitting way to end this.
That's the end of segment two. We'll come back and talk about a big recruiting weekend. Segment three of Irish Illustrated Insider. We're going to wrap up the recruiting weekend. And Pete, as always, a big weekend for Notre Dame. Not the biggest for a spring game, but some notable people in town.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that were all expected to made it. Kevin Austin would probably be the closest thing they have to a guy that they're leading with, the receiver out of Florida. Spent a lot of time with Dale Alexander, which was the key to that whole visit. He's a guy that if he had to make a decision today, I think it would be Notre Dame overwhelmingly. Chase Kota ended up making it in there. He's receiver from Oregon. Interesting guy because he's, you know, certainly a lot of Pac-12 interest. Dad played at Oregon and played for Jim Mora with the Saints, so he's got a connection to UCLA there. Also, his dad played for the Colts when Bill Polian was running that organization, and Brian Polian is Notre Dame's lead recruiter there. So, you know, to get two top 100 players out of Oregon who are both receivers would be pretty remarkable, but the guy that they're definitely in it on. P.J. Mustipher, still trying to figure out where Notre Dame thinks it stands there, because on paper it's like, well, you should wrap this one up, and I guess I'm not sure if on paper is accurate. Ohio State, Tennessee, Penn State are all involved there. Those were the big ones, and then, you know, Nazir Peoples was a real late addition. He's a Virginia Tech commit. Notre Dame's offered him. I think Notre Dame's probably going to have to do some more research there to make sure the fit's all good, but the fact that he visited after committing to Virginia Tech in February would certainly make you think that he's fairly opening to listening. And he's kind of a safety corner combo type guy. So be curious to see what they get out of that. And then, you know, there are a bunch of kids without offers who came in. It was, I think if there was a surprise, it was that they didn't end up offering any of the guys that showed. It is a spring evaluation period now, so these coaches are out on the road. So guys like Dominic Hampton, who I think would make sense to offer because he's a 6'2" corner. He's got both in-state offers, Arizona State, and Colorado. Is he a top guy? Probably not, but he's a 3-star 6'2" corner. Fits the body type that they need. That would be one that I think if I had to pick who's the next offer from the group, that would be the guy.
Kevin Austin is rated on Scout like 260-something. I think that's off by 160 or 170 players. I think Kevin Austin is a top 100 player. He's a gazelle. I mean, he's a long striding, very athletic wide receiver who makes 80% of the 50-50 ball catches, stays on his feet. He's deadly in open field. I think he's a great receiver. He's listed as a 4-star. I think he's got a bunch of 5-star qualities. And so when you say, Pete, that Notre Dame is probably the closest to getting Kevin Austin, I think that's really good. I think he's a great player.
Yeah, you look at this receiver group overall with Austin, if he would join with Lindsey and Micah Jones who are committed, you know, do they end up with Chase Kota? That's you could argue they would have three top 100 caliber receivers in that group, which would be ridiculous. Chase Kota is the highest ranked of that group. He's a top 50 player, and Lindsey's at the bottom of the top 100. Lindsey and Jones are also doing early enrollment. It'd be notable to say commitment. Oviagufu also plans to do early enrollment. So that's something to track moving forward. there will end up being 5-6 guys that do it. It's sort of a race to see who can fill up those slots. The Adamalola twins both here this weekend. They want to do it. Doesn't sound like that's going to happen for them based on sort of the academic format of their high school, St. Peter's Prep, where Brandon Wimbush played. But, overall, I think it was a productive weekend for Notre Dame in recruiting. But to say that they went out there and killed it, or it was just this blockbuster group of visitors, I don't think that would be accurate either. Now they jump into the spring evaluation period. They got 12 commits, really only room for, they would like to get to 20, but even that's going to be a challenge based on their scholarship limits. So I think overall they did a pretty good job.
I think top 300 is hard to do. And I agree with you completely on that being about 100 spots too low. When you look back at some top 300s, it becomes nonsensical when you get that far down, because you get things like James Onuwalu with all his athleticism and all the things he could do for you. Like when he came in, he thought safety, wide receiver, running back. He played, he didn't think linebacker, which ended up being great. He was 296. And Jacob Matuska, who had one chance to do anything at Notre Dame to be a high-level player, was 299. They're not in the same athletic potential going forward realm of reason.
That's where it gets difficult to compare.
Yeah, that's
running
what I mean.
Back to defensive tackle.
Compare positions, but you cannot compare running back to a guy like a power player, as Brian Kelly would say, that you're bringing in like Matuska. He's not going to... It's impossible to think he's the 300th or 299th best prospect if James Onuwalu is three spots ahead of him.
Yeah, well...
That's a tangent, but I'm just saying that
I agree with what you're saying, but when you watch Kevin Austin...
Yeah, no, that's why I said it. I think he's 100 spots up too, but it's just weird that you're trying to... Why are you having Grant Blankenship 91 and Niles Morgan 34? Niles Morgan has 60. There's not 60 guys only in between them athletically.
It's a difficult job.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing.
And,
it is.
And, a top 300, especially, we're talking about before their senior years of high school.
Yeah, that makes it even harder.
In a lot of instances, guys they're not even totally physically developed yet. So that's difficult. But love me some Kevin Austin, and that would be great news if Notre Dame could grab him.
Yeah, moving forward, they had some underclassmen over the weekend, just to touch on quickly. Kenny McIntosh was one of them, younger brother of Deion McIntosh. He's a running back athlete type from Florida who's got a ton of interest from Clemson and some other big-time schools. His mom is on record that she'd like the brothers to play together, so that's good news for Notre Dame. And then Bo Robbins, a name just file away this one moving forward. He's a 6'5", 230-pound defensive end from Carmel, Indiana. And I think he's got a chance to be really one of the top players, top defensive linemen at least in the Midwest. And I mean that in a good way. There aren't always top defensive linemen in the Midwest, but I think this guy is going to be sort of your Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Stanford type of recruitment kid. So... he was up here on Friday, the day before the game. Notre Dame likes him a lot. I guess I would be sort of surprised if they didn't offer him in the next month or so. So,
all right, we're going to be, as we with spring practice ending, obviously we're going to be doing more with recruiting. Kevin Sinclair, our new recruiting analyst, on board. Him and Pete Sampson will be doing a podcast a week from today, focusing strictly on the recruiting aspect of it. And then we've got the big draft coming
up,
right?
Third annual.
Talking about the NFL draft.
No, not at all. This is much more important.
Well, that is coming this week. And there will be more stories from Irish Illustrated on the upcoming draft as it relates to Notre Dame, but also Notre Dame's opponents, which as we start to get into evaluating Notre Dame's opponents, I think it's always important to start by saying, we only look at who Notre Dame lost. We'll look at Notre Dame's 12 opponents and who they lost. And some are pretty startling, which is to the benefit of Notre Dame in the long run. But our third annual draft. Go ahead, Tim.
Prediction, who is the first pick this year? This is who we want to write previews about this summer. Sampson, Priester, and O'Malley. What do you think? First pick?
I don't know. I think I'm going to send out some bad info the actual NFL draft that I'm... I don't know. I'm really interested in Sam Kohler, guys. I think there's a lot of buzz.
Well, technically, he will not be one of the players evaluated this summer because he would have to be a write-in candidate. We have a lot of fun with it because there really is no rhyme or reason to how you pick the players. We do a little. If you've been subscribing to Irish Illustrated the last two summers, we do each of the scholarship players and break them down and make comparisons, et cetera, et cetera. there's no benefit for choosing a good player over a player that hasn't established himself.
You try not to choose someone that lands on July 4th, things like that, you know?
Yeah, things like, right, because they are done alphabetically. So anyway, we probably have more fun with it than you will reading them. But let us have our fun.
Well, we should still film it, I think, but that's fine.
All right. Well, on that note, we're out for spring practice here. Irish Illustrated Insider, thanks for listening as usual. Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening.